Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today. We trust you had a wonderful Thanksgiving holiday with family and friends. Hopefully not too much political rancor at your Thanksgiving Day table. We also want to let you to know that all of our martinis today brought to you by the good folks at Dollar Shave Club. Right now, you can get the Dollar Shave Club starter set for just $5 exclusively at dollarshaveclub.com/martini. More on that a little bit later in the podcast. Jim, let's start with the tug of war going on now at the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau with the lovely acronym of CFPB. This is the Politico version of the story. White House Budget Director Mick Mulvaney, President Donald Trump's choice to serve as acting director of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, showed up for work Monday morning as a leadership battle over the watchdog agency escalated. Mulvaney, who arrived at about 7:30 a.m., settled into the CFPB's director's office shortly afterward, reading briefing books. Minutes later, his challenger for the job, CFPB Deputy Director Leandra English, sent the staff a message and claimed the bureau's top title. The dueling assertions of leadership underscored the legal morass that is engulfing the agency after its first director, Richard Cordray, resigned abruptly on Friday, handing the reins to English. Later on in the story, it says Cordray, who was appointed by former President Barack Obama, named English as acting director as of his resignation at midnight Friday. At about the same time, Trump designated Mulvaney, who currently heads the Office of Management and Budget, to lead the bureau until a permanent director could be nominated and confirmed. On Sunday, Ms. English sued the administration and asked for a temporary restraining order to prevent Mulvaney from being recognized. So, Jim, this is not the power struggle in some third world country like we saw maybe in Zimbabwe in recent days. No, this is what's happening in an executive office within the United States government. And of course, Trump and Mulvaney are being portrayed in many different media outlets as being heavy handed here. But here's the key phrase that I just read. Cordray, who was appointed by former President Barack Obama, which means the president has the right to make this appointment. And quite frankly, the only mystery here is why he didn't make a move here sooner, since most conservatives didn't like Richard Cordray very much. So the Constitution would seem to be firmly on the administration's side here.
This is a controversy that doesn't strike me as all that controversial, or at least it shouldn't be controversial when one side is making a pretty absurd claim. Because if you think about it, under this thinking of the Democrats and Liz Warren and you know, folks like that are making the argument, look, the president appoints the first director, and then the president never gets to appoint anybody. The first director then gets to appoint his successor and his successor and his successor all the way on through eternity. The president never gets a say in who actually runs this organization ever again. It has created a life of its own. It is now beyond the accountability of the president or the executive branch. It is Frankenstein. It is alive. It is unbound. There are no strings on it like Pinocchio or Ultron. No, that's not the way it works. You know, if the president made the first appointment of the first director, then when the next guy comes in, when there's a vacancy, you say, okay, let's bring in the next one. And there's some argument of, okay, well, look, inside Dodd-Frank, there's code, there's a language there that says deputy director shall serve as acting director in the absence or unavailability of the director. Now, we've all been through this. We went through this last week when you were out, Greg, when somebody's sick, right? When somebody's on vacation, they're coming back. They're not, they haven't fallen off a cliff somewhere. Nothing, you know, they're not running for governor of Ohio, as Richard Cordray clearly is going to do. They're not retiring, right? This is clearly a sense in which Cordray's not coming back through that door, to sound a little bit like Rick Pitino, okay? Cordray is gone. This is not a temporary provision where we need this person to step in. There is an opening, and this is now the duty of the president to say, okay, the President Obama got to appoint his guy, I'm going to appoint my guy. You're my guy, Mulvaney. I want you to take this over. So, again, this is a not that bizarre. I hope the courts deal with this quickly, and I hope they don't end up judge shopping and finding some judge who's like, well, technically the law says Trump is right, but I really don't like Trump, so I'm going to do a long, elaborate explanation that says, well, technically probably because the moon is rising in Sagittarius, I've decided that this the Obama appointees get to keep the way they want. Look, this is a consequence of the presidency and consequence of elections, people. You don't get to ignore it just because you don't like it. And I think it is an indication of just how vehemently anti-constitutional the thinking of so many folks on the left side of the aisle is, that if the Constitution, if the law says X and they don't want X to happen, they immediately start looking for ways to ignore it, which is not a formula for responsible governing.
All right, Jim, let's move on to our second martini now. And last week we learned of a couple different members of Congress who have been behaving badly. One of them is the longest serving member of the U.S. House of Representatives, John Conyers of Michigan. Until yesterday, he was the top Democrat on the House Judiciary Committee. Nancy Pelosi, the House Democratic leader, was on Meet the Press. Conyers, of course, was revealed last week, I think it was in a BuzzFeed article, to have made settlements with people accusing him of sexual harassment, which Conyers now vehemently denies. There was another woman who came out who actually did not make a settlement, who talked about some of her allegations against Conyers over time. Chuck Todd at NBC asking Nancy Pelosi what should be the fate of John Conyers in this era of women coming forward, explaining how they were harassed or potentially assaulted. And of course, the mantra on both sides of the political aisle to a large extent has been to believe the accusers. And we'll talk in a minute about how both sides have also been hypocritical on that. But Jim, here is Chuck Todd asking Nancy Pelosi about this and Nancy Pelosi's stunning response. We got two clips bumped right up against each other here.
You said there's now a zero tolerance.
Yes.
John Conyers, what does that mean for him right now?
Let's say
in or out.
We are strengthened by due process. Mm-hmm. Just because someone is accused, and was it one accusation? Is it two? I think there has to be. John Conyers is an icon in our country.
Do you believe the accusers?
Excuse me?
Do you believe John Conyers is accused?
I don't know who they are. Do you? They have not really come forward. And that gets
so you don't know if you believe the accusations.
What, that's for the Ethics Committee to review. But I believe he understands what is at stake here, and he will do the right thing.
What a horrifically pathetic dodge there, Jim. One did come forward, and another one is clearly named in the settlement, so she came forward to some extent, just not publicly, until this whole thing was revealed. And there's a larger question about whether these settlements should be made public, or at least the names of some of the people involved here. Nancy Pelosi's horrific performance probably led to John Conyers being forced to step down as the ranking Democrat on the House Judiciary Committee yesterday. What do you make of Nancy Pelosi's performance on this issue?
This is almost a good martini because she's so hilariously bad at this. but all in all, here's, if you believe that we are learning a lot about elected leaders and candidates not living up to the ethical standards that we expect of them, then you'd like to see accountability, and you'd like to see accountability across the board. You don't just want to punish the bad guys on the other side. You really shouldn't be all that eager to have bad guys on your side. What she's doing here, a lot of speculation that this is, you know, this is giving some Republicans in Alabama the excuse they're looking for to vote for Roy Moore. When she says, well, look, these are just accusations. Well, look, I mean, Roy Moore, we can say the volume of accusations against Roy Moore is compelling. We can say the detail in the accusations against Roy Moore is compelling. But there's not light years of separation between Al Franken and Roy Moore. They both are accused of treating women inappropriately. And what you're seeing right now is a lot of people tying themselves in knots to say, well, I believe the accusers of the people I don't like, but I don't believe the accusers of the people I do like. And, you know, they get into the Franken case, and then you get to Conyers. Look, Conyers reached settlements with these women, right? So if they were totally making this up and they were all cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs and you know, pathological liars, and there's no reason to believe any of this stuff, you kind of have a suspicion that the Conyers office would not have reached these settlements look, there's now three or four of them, and they're discussed in the Washington Post. They've just given this fairly amount of detail to their accusations. And oh, by the way, if you want to know the name, the name of the woman making the accusation is on the forms that are there in the BuzzFeed article and the Washington Post article. As I wrote in the Morning Jolt today, that Nancy Pelosi is practicing a certain amount of strategic ignorance or strategic obliviousness. Also coming forward, it was a couple of days ago that my former colleague Tim Alberta, now with Politico, says, look, everybody who's in the Michigan congressional delegation, everybody who's in Democratic leadership, everybody who has any interaction with Congressman John Conyers knows he's, quote, mentally not all there, unquote. He is getting up there in years. Dementia and Alzheimer's is a heartbreaking sort of thing to deal with. But ideally, if that's the case, and I certainly, you know, it's not like his public appearances would make you say this is a guy who's still sharp as a knife. You'd like to see him get the care he needs, and he does not belong in Congress. Now, Pelosi kept making this big deal towards the end of the day. Oh, he's stepping down as the ranking member on the Judiciary Committee. Yay. Look, if you're not mentally competent to do that, and let's point out that the New York Times says that at least twice he's shown up to meetings in pajamas. Greg, I don't know about you. These are the moments where you start taking away the car keys from grandpa, right? You basically don't want, if you don't trust someone to operate heavy machinery, why would you want to give them a vote in Congress? So all in all, it's kind of the typical appalling double standard we've come to expect from Democrats. There, at least some of us are trying to fight amongst our own side of Republicans. My suspicion is that this will probably set up a new round of tit for tat. Like, okay, you're not going to throw out your guy. I'm not going to throw out my guy. And more bad behavior gets tolerated on both sides.
Well, John Conyers goes to meetings in his pajamas. When we're in our pajamas, we're grooming ourselves, getting ready for the day. And some good gifts are available now on that front through the Dollar Shave Club. You've heard us talking about the amazing shave we get from our Dollar Shave Club razors, especially when we use it along with the Dr. Carver shave butter. Well, we're here now to tell you that membership just got even better with Dollar Shave Club because they've added even more products to improve your daily routine. Dollar Shave Club makes products for your hair, face, skin, shower, everything you need. And they have us feeling and looking amazing.
And it's all their own original stuff. They only use the finest premium ingredients and they deliver it to you just like they do with their razors. This means no more annoying trips to the store, cruising up and down the aisles, looking at shelf upon shelf, and asking the staff, what is that? What do I do with it? And don't bother asking because they probably don't know. You can use Dollar Shave Club for almost everything, razors, body cleanser, hair gel, and yes, even butt wipes. Dollar Shave Club has you covered from head to toe.
And now is a great time to give Dollar Shave Club a try. You can get your first month of their best razor along with travel size versions of the shave butter, body cleanser, and yes, even butt wipes for just $5. After that, replacement cartridges for the razor ship for just a few bucks a month. It's the Dollar Shave Club starter set. Get yours for just $5 exclusively at dollarshaveclub.com/martini. That's dollarshaveclub.com/martini. Jim, as we move to our crazy martini now, if you are a Trump supporter, there's one person you don't need to bother getting anything for this holiday season because he doesn't want to be your friend. Charles Blow, we've had him featured a few different times in the crazy martini for horrific things that he's written about in the past. This time it's a tweet from the day after Thanksgiving, no less, where he says, quote, "If you support Trump, we don't have anything to talk about and we can't be friends. This isn't about parties or ideology. This is about right and wrong." Jim, it's hard enough sometimes when the blood gets pumping to find common ground with folks on the other side of the aisle. But, you know, I'm sure it's the same thing in your family. There's people in your family that disagree with you politically. There's people you're good friends with, that you work with, that you go to church with, that you associate with in different ways out in the community. And to shut yourself off from someone and not even be willing to engage in a conversation just shows how infantile some people are.
You know, a really fun question that I have yet to see if Charles Blow has answered this question. Does this mean he's going to give up any friendships with anybody who he's currently friends with? I mean, you know, so the first question is this, you know, is making this declaration really all that principled or a stance or a sacrifice on your part if you genuinely don't have any friends who voted for Trump? By the way, if you're a New York Times columnist and you've write about, but I believe, I have to go back and check, but at one point since Trump's inauguration, he had written something like 35, I want to say 40 columns. Of those, all of them but two had been about Donald Trump. I mean, every day Charles Blow gets up, looks at his computer and writes, "Donald Trump stinks," in some variation of it. It's a free country. Charles Blow can do that. I do kind of wonder at what point do the editors step in and stage an intervention? hey, Charles, is there anything else on your mind today? You know, the weather, anything going on that you might want to write about? Anything state level? Anything interesting happened to you at lunch or on your commute or anything? Is there anything you want to, because, you know, look, you at some point, somebody online, if they haven't done this already, should set up the Charles Blow automatic column generator with the same pre-written, you know, "This is the greatest outrage in the history of outrages. I never thought I'd live and see this day when Trump would do blah, blah, blah." You know, sometimes Trump has very legitimate criticism. Sometimes he doesn't. But Charles Blow really sounds like a broken record. in this category. And I want to point out, as a guy, you look way back when Mitt Romney was running for president, he made jokes about Mitt Romney's magic underpants. And I was, you know what, that is ridiculous, absolutely obnoxious, uncalled for, unacceptable religious bigotry that would never be tolerated if it was targeted any other group except Mormons. The New York Times ought to be ashamed of it. And I went to the public editor of the New York Times, and they, you know, the usual tisk tisk. And I said, well, you're going to write about this? And he said, well, I'm not going to be bullied into anything. So in the end, the New York Times didn't really want to hold Charles Blow accountable for making jokes about Mormons. And once again, there's this ludicrous double standard about this. So Charles Blow really never got held accountable for that. I believe he said to Mitt Romney, stick that in your magic underwear or something like that. I mean, again, is this what the New York Times really wants to stand for? Are they proud of these kinds of expressions? And again, I think it's safe to say nobody's been paying much attention to Charles Blow for a very long time. I asked the question of whether this really represents any major, you know, decision on his part, if he has any Republican friends. But here's kind of maybe a bigger question worth asking in light of this. And maybe this is, you know, reveals a great deal, Greg. The bigger question is, does Charles Blow have friends? This is entirely a theoretical conversation for him.
I don't know, but I think it is worth probing just a little bit further on this. And so is Charles Blow at the extreme end of the increasingly intense political debate in this country? Or are people losing a lot of friends based on their political convictions and how public they are with them?
You know, Greg, that is a fair question. You do hear this. We just got through Thanksgiving and the inevitable, you know, how to stand to be in the same room with your uncle who voted for Trump, or, you know, how to not throw stuffing at your obnoxious millennial nephew or something like that. You know, look, life is going to throw a lot of things at us where we're going to want to have family. Health problems, tragedies, lost jobs, financial hardship, marital problems. You know, life has plenty of challenges. You don't want to throw away family members. You don't want to throw away friends. You kind of want to go through life with as many people on your side as possible. So I don't quite understand this idea that family and friends would be so expendable. And the other kind of nagging feeling is, like, is this the first time Charles Blow has had people he loves, or people, his friends, people in his life strongly disagree with him? Because most of us go through this on a fairly regular basis and manage to not tear apart our friendships over this. So, again, I think it's a indication of, it goes from shifting from my friends or colleagues or associates who think differently are mistaken and wrong and you know, maybe not even all that smart, versus my people who think differently are evil. That's a very dangerous place for a democracy to be headed.
Yes, unfortunately, we see it more and more. Jim, good to be back with you. Talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And don't forget to visit our friends at the Dollar Shave Club. Right now, get the Dollar Shave Club starter set for just $5. DollarShaveClub.com/martini. And tune in again on Tuesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.